All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, May 1st. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
It's May, buddy. Can you believe it? Spring has sprung. It feels good, nice outside. I feel like I can walk outside and it's going to be May's. GIFs and memes are all over my Facebook today with Justin Timberlake. It feels like a good day. Are you excited?
It sounds like your Doug has sprung for spring. That's awesome, man. Just like excited.
I don't know. I feel very good today. I'm usually not in such a great mood Tuesday mornings. But here we go. DFSR.com/MLB is the website to get a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. Basketball, while it's still going on here, the playoffs keep chugging along. Tristan Thompson's going to be 100% owned because FanDuel didn't correct this price. So go on over and get some NBA lineups.
That's
in today.
A freebie. Nice job. Just giving crazy. Away free content. You're insane. I mean, how can you afford to do that? That's the crazy thing, I imagine.
DFSR.com/MLB, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. Buddy, today is a pitcher's day, and there are so many aces. If you want to say there's like maybe 10 aces and all, like true, legit, elite-level aces, like five of them are going today. And maybe there's not even 10. Maybe like this is five of the total eight that are going. Do you remember when you see a day like this? I mean, we have Kershaw, Sale, Scherzer. I'm going to throw Verlander in there, Syndergaard. These are just some of the best arms in baseball. We're going to have to choose one or two of them. It feels like an opening day. I feel like we've talked about this because maybe this happened last week with a kind of a mashup of guys like this, but do you like when you see this many names? Does it make you nervous that anyone can kind of just run into a great performance because of the overall talent level? I mean, what was your first reaction when you kind of looked at this group of names and knew you'd have to be setting some lineups?
You basically described my sentiment, which is just like, it's kind of overkill to me. I don't really like to have this many options because that means that even the very worst players, like especially on FanDuel where you only need one pitcher, there isn't a lot of art to choosing between these top guys today. Our system likes them all very, very similarly on a points per dollar basis. I mean, there's definitely some guys that seem to rise to the top here. And obviously, like I think you can probably get a little bit of safety by leaning in one direction and leaning away from another direction. DraftKings, as always, is like a little bit more nuanced because it's just very hard to pay up for two of the five best pitchers in baseball. Like that's winds up leaving you with just a little bit thin in the kitty there.
Leaves you without 50%. It basically takes 50% of your salary cap essentially.
And our number two lineup right now has Sale and Scherzer. So it's a spoiler alert there, or a teaser perhaps, depending on the way you want to look at it. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a strange night when it comes to figuring out which pitcher that you want. And I think there's going to be a decent amount of variance because, like we saw with Kershaw the last time around, a great pitcher doesn't always mean great performance. So if you happen to guess wrong tonight, you're going to be up a creek because you're probably not going to get bailed out by the other pitchers people pick being bad too.
Yeah, I want to start with Kershaw, actually. And I'm not saying this because I think he's the best play overall today. I think we're going to probably land somewhere else. But I do have a question here about Kershaw. He's coming off basically his worst game of his career. There possibly has been a time where he's walked six guys in a game, and I looked back and could not find one. So when you see a game like this, like he was bad. We rostered him, obviously, so I was like extra tuned into how bad he was that day. Our chat was extra tuned into how bad he was that day going in. But when you see like an outlier game like this, for one thing, I sometimes just get worried the guy's injured. Because like when you see a game that's so crazy out of form for a pitcher, especially one where we have a long track record with a guy like Kershaw, I kind of wait for like the next day for the guy to go on the DL. Now that did not happen, but there are some. How worried are we that maybe we are starting to see a decline in Scherzer? Specifically, I'll point to two numbers that have me a little worried. One is. One of the strikeouts are down. So he has been over 10 per 9 for his career. It's down a little bit lower. But the number that I'm really concerned about is the fastball velocity is down 2 miles per hour off his career average. This guy's been living in like the 93 to 94 range for basically his whole career. And now he's down to under 92 miles an hour. When you see a drop in velocity for a pitcher, how much do we want to is it just early season and this is what happens? Or is this something that we maybe need to start getting concerned about? Because when you start losing velocity, that things can, the wheels can fall off maybe a little quicker than they would have for you in the past.
Yeah, I mean, lower velocity at the beginning of a season isn't that unusual for many pitchers. I don't know offhand, unfortunately, whether Kershaw is one of those pitchers or not. I don't seem to remember him struggling in the past. But yeah, again, that's just not something I have pulled off pulled up off the tip of my tongue or anything. I'm with you that six walks, like to go 21 straight innings without a walk in his three prior starts to getting six walks in five innings against a really, really bad team in Miami is like not the direction, obviously, that we're hoping for things to head. So yeah, that was definitely concerning to me. I think on a night like tonight, you're probably like our system, regardless of any independent inputs, isn't picking Kershaw anyway. So maybe this is actually a blessing in disguise, because on most nights we would want to be considering playing Kershaw. At Arizona is one of the tougher places to pitch anyways. So I think we kind of get bailed out there, especially just, again, given that we have four other guys that are all not, maybe not quite Kershaw level if he's peak Kershaw, but certainly on the level of slightly downgraded Kershaw, even if the excuse is that it's been April. So yeah, I'm still optimistic. I suspect highly that Kershaw will still be an excellent pitcher this season. I suspect highly that we'll play him many more times in DFS before it's all said and done. And I'm a little bit relieved at Pop very easily being able to take a break from him tonight.
Yeah, we have him ranked as the fourth highest raw points projection of the five guys that I mentioned here. So I'm with you. I'm glad this is not a situation. I very rarely take the I need to see something before I roster you approach, because that's usually just the wrong way to go. Really, with any kind of projection service, you get the most gains by being out ahead of a curve rather than just kind of waiting to come around the bend on it. So
rather than reactive.
Exactly. There are a few situations where I'm willing, and I really want to do it more with pitchers than with bats, but there are a few situations where I am willing to just say, it's just okay. Now, if he was the only pitcher pitching tonight, I think we'd be in a different discussion, but luckily we do have some of these other guys. So of those other names, the leftover guys, or the rest of them, are Sale, Scherzer, Verlander, and Syndergaard. Do you have an inkling of which direction you'd like to go? Sale's coming off not a great game in his own right, but we have him ranked pretty high. Where do you think you're going to end up landing? Let's say lineup's locked in the next hour. Do you have a sense of where you would go?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't have a locked up line in my mind, because I think a lot of it's just going to come down to these subtle differences in pricing and how the pieces fit in around it. Right now, Chris Sale is showing up in our optimal FanDuel lineups, and that feels comfortable for me. I think in Sale, regardless of the fact that he's coming off one bad start, I think you know what you're getting in him, which first and foremost is the elite innings. I really just love a guy who's just going to be putting up, on a reasonable day, 6.5-7 innings a game. He just had a really nice start against Oakland. Going at Toronto is a pretty tough spot for any pitcher to pitch. Rogers Center is a very tough park, and the Blue Jays have a lot of good righties, so I'm not going to hold that against him too much. Although with Sale, of course, the story you tell yourself when you're playing a guy like Sale is that he's basically matchup proof. So I do like Sale quite a bit. I think if I were to pivot off of Sale, I really like Scherzer as well. I mean, talk about a guy who is just like the definition of consistency and upside this season. 13 Ks per nine.
Yeah.
He's adding a K per nine each year so far. His walks are down. The Ks are up. The innings per start are as good as ever. So I think that, my gut tells me that Scherzer's the best play just in terms of like a raw points basis. And I'm also willing to trust the numbers here. So we'll see where it comes out.
It's very close between these two guys. If you look at the money lines, they are both -250. Well, excuse me. Right now, Sale is -280. Scherzer -250, both with implied run lines. So you're getting maybe slightly less implied runs on the Kansas City side of it, which helps Sale in this case. Kansas City is a pretty bad team, all things considered. They, regardless of what we saw, they gave Eduardo Rodriguez some issues last night, but that's not something I want to translate from one game to the other. He was getting squeezed early and just really couldn't find the plate, and then it was able to mostly work out of a disaster first inning. So people will point to Vegas got it wrong yesterday with Eduardo Rodriguez. I really didn't. It's just not one of those things that like you can supplant one day onto the next day, especially
let's slow down for a second and talk about what Vegas getting it wrong even means, because Vegas is, this is a largely misunderstood thing by both our chatters and just the gambling public at large. Vegas doesn't get it wrong when a game scores twice as many runs as they set the over-under at. That is not an example of Vegas getting it wrong. What getting it wrong would be Vegas didn't consider this or that variable, and so they set the wrong line according to what should happen on average. But like a ton of runs can get scored just by a bunch of seeing eye singles and random events and like errors and like all sorts of different things can happen. Acts of God, rain, there's all sorts of different ways that a game can go in a way that was unpredictable, and that's just part and parcel of this. So I think people should probably take the Vegas got it wrong thing out of their vernacular until they really understand what that even means.
Good luck at getting that to happen, because that's
that's my mission, buddy. That's my mission. I'm optimistic, you know.
It hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. It's just like the thing is, I get why people use it as a lamppost to kind of lean on and shed light on, because it is there are very few just cumulative ways to get a bird's eye view of a game going in. And Vegas does give one of those things, because the other way you can go is trying to take 1,000 different inputs, which if you it's possible, you know, but to try to boil 1,000 different inputs into projectable numbers is actually probably just going to have more variance and even more variance in the long run, because it's just that is also a similarly difficult venture to walk down when you consider weather and splits and all the
and that's a better approach than just using your eyeball test as a fan who likes to watch Blue Jays games. Like, right. You know, you're upgrading your approach. See, the thing about Vegas is that if you don't like Vegas's projections, that's fine. Like, the good news there is you can bet as much money as you have, up to and including mortgaging your home, cashing out your retirements, on any given game, on any given night, if you just simply walk into Vegas and do so, right? So if you think they're so bad at projecting over-unders, then put your money where your mouth is. Don't play DFS, because you're going to have a better game just by doing that. But the fact of the matter is they're not wrong more often than not. On average, over the course of a season, that is the best way known to man to project how many runs are going to be scored that's publicly available. So yeah, our system modifies that. We don't use that. And I highly suggest people use our system over at dfsr.com/MLB. That will be better than simply using Vegas runs based on our data. But like, your eyeball test is not as good as our system or Vegas lines. So that's, I don't want to like be a jerk about it, but it's time to just close the book on that conversation as far as I'm concerned.
With Sale, you are getting just a quick analysis of their opponents. They Sale, you're getting a Royals team that's striking out top third most against lefties this season. They have a WOBA somewhere in the middle of the pack. So they've actually been struggling even more lately. With Scherzer, he's facing the Pirates. They don't strike out a ton as a team, so you're not looking at. You're just not looking at probably outsized Ks from the opponent, because they strike out less than 20% of the time. But they're also just kind of a weak hitting team. So again, Scherzer, you know, we can say about matchup proof. Scherzer does sort of land in this area of he can just strike anybody out. Now maybe the expectation's a little bit less, but when you're striking out 13 guys per nine innings, I mean, where are you going down to 12 per nine? You're not going to take too much of a dip off of the expectation just because you're playing a team that strikes out a little bit less. Last two guys, just to touch on here, I do think there's upside on getting a guy like Verlander in this spot. The Yankees team has a lot of power in their lineup, obviously. They do strike out a lot, 24% of the time against righties this season. That middle of the lineup, while they can do a lot of damage to you, guys like Stanton does strike out a lot. Judge will strike out. Verlander has, you know, we saw this with Morton yesterday. You can roll through their lineup. There's going to be variance on it. How much do we want to make of Verlander's K per nine? Like, he's spiking it to over almost 11 Ks per nine this season. This would be his most strikeouts for his career, for a season, per nine. Would be the highest number of his career. I mean, where do we want to land with him on this number? Because these kind of decisions, especially at this point in the season, do matter when it comes to projections. If you want to, because like, his career number is 8.5. Like, he's clearly not going to be a career guy like this, right? So you really can't look at career numbers, because the last couple of seasons have been higher. But this does matter. Like, the even a half a strikeout per nine for a system like ours with projections kind of matters. Where do you see him landing at the end of the year with this number? Do you think he sustains it, or do you think we see maybe him regress back to some of his historical means?
No, I think he's a true talent 10 Ks per nine guy right now. You know, he did it for all of 2016. He was excellent. He was 9.6 last year. He's 10.9 this year on a team that has a good track record of helping people increase their Ks. So I think Verlander's legit. I think he's just a truly, truly, really good pitcher right now. I think the 3.5 xFIP probably tells a fairly accurate tale here. And there's some underlying stats that probably point to why I'd prefer to not play him in cash games. First of all, I'm still deeply emotionally scarred from running Garrett Richards against this Yankees lineup a couple nights ago. That really hurt me in ways I don't really hope to talk about on the podcast, especially because people ask me in chat, hey man, are we really sure about Garrett Richards for cash? And I said, definitely, just a great value. I gave the same case you just gave basically, and the same thing that came to fruition with Charlie Morton. But yeah, it didn't work out quite as well. Six runs instantaneously, et cetera, et cetera. So on a night like tonight, so you have Verlander, huge upside against this K-happy Yankees lineup for sure. But the 29% ground ball rate, which will be the lowest in the majors if he manages to qualify by the end of the season, you simply don't see numbers that low over the course of a whole season, means that there's going to be a lot of variance here. He's going to strike guys out. He's probably pitching a lot more up in the zone this season, and he's going to wind up giving up a lot more home runs than he's given up so far too. So yeah, I'm bullish on Verlander's long-term prospects. I think the K numbers are going to be elite this season. I think he'll have some blow-up games, and this one seems like a decent candidate to do so. So if you're picking between him and four other aces, I'm going to go in a different direction for cash.
And the last guy is Syndergaard. I mean, Syndergaard has been almost as good, has been maybe the best of this whole group, except for maybe Scherzer. Like, he's right now 12 Ks per nine. He's not walking anybody. 1.3 walks per nine this season in 34 innings. The xFIP, 2.13 xFIP, is among the lowest in basically the whole majors. He's creeping up on his war for all of last season, and he barely even got into this one. But, you know, where do we land with him? Because he gets a Braves lineup that with Acuna hitting second is a better lineup. But is this guy getting close to matchup proof too? Because if he's able to sustain these kind of K numbers, then we're talking about him in the same conversation with a guy like Scherzer, just in terms of just overall upside.
Yeah, Syndergaard's insane. I mean, he's just one of the very best pitchers in all the majors, and another totally fine cash game option tonight. When you can put up against Scherzer and Sale and any of those guys. I think Atlanta, you know, again, we're in the splitting hairs category here. Atlanta has historically been a tougher team to strike out than some of these other teams with their current lineup construction. So maybe that makes you lean in the direction of somebody else. And the money line isn't quite as good here. The Mets, you know, from all of their early season hubbub, have been pretty bad since they came out to that 14-1 start. So the -168 is going to be a lot worse than Scherzer and Sale's lines. So, you know, on a site like FanDuel where the win really matters, you're probably going to lean in the direction of a guy who's more likely to get the win. But yeah, ultimately, Syndergaard's great. And if he winds up in your cash game lineups, don't cross him out or anything like that.
If it was any other night without this many arms, Chris Archer would definitely be a guy I'd be considering here. I think that we're still buying very low on him just because he's struggled to start the season, mostly in the ERA. His other numbers are pretty much in line with what he's done for his career. He's still K-ing 10 per 9. The walks are always going to be an issue for him, 3 per 9. That's been just the way that's just the kind of pitcher he's been over the last couple, basically since he hit the majors. It isn't going to change. He just struggles with the walks. But his ERA is still his xFIP is still 3 runs lower than his ERA, and the xFIP is right in line sort of with what he's done in the past. Like I said, if there weren't this many just elite arms, I could see him it'd just be a day ending when Archer pitches and our system wants to play him like at his current prices. So I think if there was just maybe one or two less guys here, Archer would be – actually, take that back. Archer's just coming into the top DraftKings lineup.
Well, he's coming in on DraftKings. So a word of caution on Archer, I think, and, you know, it's more like a – I guess it's a combination of a question and a word of caution. There are pitchers – who over time underperform their xFIP, right? Like we saw this with Ricky in Alaska. You know, there are guys that come and go where for whatever reason, and you know, this is what makes sports interesting, that it's not perfectly solved just yet, but the underlying peripherals don't ever seem to turn into the ERA performance that xFIP, you know, purports to predict, right? So in the case of Archer, his xFIP has been lower than his ERA in each of the last four seasons. And as you go back, like that's a trend that continues even into the minors in some cases. Is he a guy who we look at and say, sure, like the Ks have been insane. He's been excellent at, or just fine in terms of generating ground balls. Really, the control isn't that big an issue. But these home run balls, man, the last three seasons, 1.3 and 1.2. This year, 1.7 home runs per nine. These are really bad numbers, and they can lead to a lot of big innings, a lot of blowups. I'm not saying you don't play him on DraftKings. I think he's still undervalued there based on the 6.6 ERA this season. But at what point do you become concerned that he's actually more like a true talent 4 ERA guy rather than a 3.4 ERA guy?
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, he has a lot of innings under his belt where he's maybe, I don't know, a third or a fourth of a run lower in terms of xFIP than the ERA. And that's your
0.65 last year, 0.6 year before that, 0.23 the year before that.
That's, right, you're building up to this is 1,000 innings of this too, by the way. Like, so
that's all I'm saying.
This is a sample size. This is a relevant sample size, right? So basically, you know, and it's rarely you get a relevant sample size like this because guys switch teams. Like, this is all the same team too. Like, so he's just been
same home park, the whole thing. And yeah, it's tricky with that because on the same token, somebody will be the unluckiest pitcher in baseball, right? Like, that's the way luck works. Somebody will be the luckiest and somebody will be the unluckiest. So you have to allow for the chance that, and you know, with the way probabilistic outcomes work as well, like, sure, just because he's ran bad in terms of left on base percentage or home runs for fly ball or whatever, doesn't mean that he won't keep running bad or that the next game he goes out won't be bad too. And so it's hard to know what's predictive and what's just statistical noise. You know, that's, I guess, part of the science here. But yeah, I'm concerned that Occam's razor suggests that it's probably more likely that there's something about him that yields more home runs rather than that he's been unlucky.
All right. I think we've covered pitchers pretty adequately here. Hit us up with a sponsor, then we'll talk about some bats we can stack with some of these elite arms.
You got it. So let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. They're a great place to go and play the salary cap game formats like you're used to, but without all the intense competition from the Sharks putting in hundreds of lineups at a time. So really targeted for players who are playing between, like, say, $5 and $100 per night. Great place to go to build a bankroll, both on the basis of more casual opponents and the free rolls that they offer almost every weekend. So check them out, FantasyFactor.com.
With this many high-priced arms going, and you really simply can't fade them, I don't think you can fade them all. It's going to be tough fade to even think about fading them all for tournaments, right? To pick someone.
Right.
This is where Archer probably just gets left out in the cold, especially on FanDuel, is that is it realistic to think that the $2,000 to $3,000 that you're going to get savings on him is going to pay off in the long run when you look at against this entire list of guys? It's very difficult to consider that happening. That being said, we are going to need to find some value with the bats. There's some bum hunters going here today, taking the mound. There are some direct opposite guys going from some of the pitchers that we named before. Is there a stack that you're honing in on now that looks both high upside in terms of overall runs and also just cheap? Because we are going to need to find savings here to roster some of these expensive pitchers.
Yeah, well, on some level, looking at these pictures is like the way my wife feels when the dessert tray comes out at the nice restaurant, where it's like, holy cow, I only have to get to pick one of these desserts, and then I have to, like, we have to settle on this. Can we each get one, and then we split it? Thankfully, that is what you can do for DFS purposes, don't you? You don't have to only stack one pitcher, because there were some real, real bad pitchers. The two that come to mind immediately are Alex Cobb on the Orioles and James Shields, and they're facing, let's see, Cobb's up against the Angels and Shields is up against the Cardinals. Both of those have to be phenomenal stacks simply because these pitchers are just the type, and you know, we've been saying this from Shields' case for years, but like, it's just really hard to imagine that he's going to get to continue taking the mound with a 4.6 Ks per nine and the 5.2 walks per nine that accompanies it, and the insane run good that he's had in terms of home runs allowed. Like, I might have made this observation on the last podcast, but 0.6 home runs allowed per nine on a 38% ground ball percentage and a 5% home run to fly ball percentage is utterly unsustainable. Just for a frame of reference, he's averaged 2 home runs per nine, which would be the worst in the majors of the last 2 seasons if he had the decency to pitch enough innings to qualify. So Shields at this point is just like one of the very worst of all time to continue taking the mound. And Cobb doesn't rate to be that much better, at least so far. I mean, 3 Ks per nine, 2.3 walks per nine, 2.3 home runs per nine, albeit over the 3-game sample size. Just a big part of that Orioles stable of guys who should have been good but completely suck. So that's those are the two guys I'm going to be looking to stack against tonight for sure.
One thing I appreciate about James Shields is, like, in this day and age of, like, you know, social justice and equal opportunity and making sure everyone, like, gets a chance, like, this guy is fully supportive of both lefties and righties getting their turn against him.
There's no
like taking advantage of one side of the platoon or just making sure, you know, the lefties get a little bit more than the righties.
Righty bats matter.
346 WOBA versus lefties and 348 WOBA against righties. This guy is awful. So you're not even worried when you look at the top of the St. Louis lineup. You're not worried about the righty bats like Pham and Azuna, Jose Martinez. You love Matt Carpenter in this spot, obviously, but you're not even worried about the righty bats because they can, even with a slight dip in expectation on their side of their platoons, it doesn't even matter. This is how just how bad Shields is. And Cobb, I mean, these numbers again, like, this guy, he must be hurt. At some point, he was supposed to be good. Like, he was with the Rays, he was a prospect. He was supposed to be
a huge prospect.
Something. Yeah, like striking out more than a batter per nine in the minors. And then he's just one of these guys where he gets to the majors. I guess he had a couple seasons of 8.
But he was good when he first came up, but it just never turned into, it never kept going in that same direction.
He's like, well, guys, don't look at the 13-11 ERA. Nothing to see in that one. My xFIP is more just like, I'm just a very bad 5.4 xFIP. It's not going to be historically bad. It's going to regress to just being straight up dog.
It's not like if your child were to come and take the mound. It's going to be more like just a James Shields level, Ben.
Anyway, besides those, so I think it's going to be a little harder to play the Angels. They're just because they're a little bit more expensive, and there are a lot of their runs are concentrated on Mike Trout, who is you do have to pay for, and he's having just an unbelievable season so far. Leads the majors in home runs. It's going to be tough to roster him. It's going to be tough. It'd be weird to, I think, to roster a most expensive pitcher and then just punt everywhere else and roster a guy like Trout, because that is you could cause yourself some pain with that, just in case if he were to go like as over 4 day, which can happen for these guys. After these guys, after those two pitchers, anyone else you want to hone in on? Any other teams, or maybe just even some one-offs that look like they're in good spots? Again, with the eye on, we're trying to grab a couple of these guys cheap.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the stacks that people's eyes will gravitate toward but ultimately wind up being a little bit too expensive will be the Red Sox. Maybe you can figure it out on DraftKings if you can pair Archer with one of the lesser expensive big name arms. But Jacob Junis is, you know, he's not on the level of Cobb and Shields, it doesn't look like. He's more just like kind of generically bad. But giving up tons of home runs this year, 2.23 home runs per nine off last year's pretty bad campaign of 1.4 home runs per nine, which included bullpen work as well. So, you know, that should have been to his advantage. Didn't wind up playing out that way. Our system is going to be back on the Brew Crew tonight too, man. Homer Bailey going up against them. Another one of these younger arms that never panned out the way that people were hoping for. And just another guy that, you know, should give up a decent amount of runs. The last one I have pulled up here, and maybe you're seeing something else, but the Twins. I like the Twins against Marco Estrada. Estrada's another guy who seems like he's been good at times, but the home runs allowed on him are just so insane. Like, he's been up in the stratosphere, really, in terms of home runs allowed for going on 5 seasons now. So it doesn't really matter what else he does around it. Like, the 8.5 Ks per nine, fine. The walk numbers aren't insane. But just a guy who can't get out of his own way in terms of these fly balls allowed. Hasn't topped 33% ground ball rate in any of the last 5 seasons. He's always right there among the very, very bottom of the league in terms of generating ground balls. And it just turns into home runs, man. That's just how that works. And so stacking the Twins tonight against him, if you can get some of the cheaper guys, you might be in pretty good shape there too.
One thing to note about Estrada is that he's a pretty stark a reverse platoon guy. He gets crushed by righties. Like, for a righty pitcher, he's been way worse against righties basically every season for the last three. 293, 30 points higher for righties against in 2016. And this is in terms of WOBA. 30 points higher for righties in 2016. 50 points higher in WOBA. No, excuse me. No, I did the wrong math. 70 points higher, worse against righties in 2017. And the hits just keep coming this season. He's allowing a 436 WOBA to righties. So one of those situations where you want to usually, it's very rare for a guy for this to be the case with pitchers. Usually it just works out. Righties are better against righties. Estrada is not in that situation here. So guys like Dozier, Sano has been banged up, so I'm not sure he's going. He's going to be in the lineup today, but Dozier at the top of the lineup. They're probably going to hit guys like Escobar and Rosario in the middle of the lineup. But again, you can still grab some of these righty bats. And I'm with you on Homer Bailey. He gets the Brewers get not only a guy who loves to just give up home runs, but they get arguably the best hitters parked today in Cincinnati. Great American Ballpark is when Coors isn't on the slate, I think they rate as the second highest in overall power and park factor. Over the last couple of seasons. So there are, with all the great arms today, there are still a lot of bad pitchers going. And two more guys I just want to throw out there. Wilmer Flores coming cheap, and he's a great platoon guy. Should be hitting the top of the lineup. And I think if you see Matt Adams, he's only 2,000 on FanDuel. So if you're looking to just grab some savings for a guy that should hit in the middle of the order, I think Adams will be there today against the righty for Washington. So just these are guys that our system is just going to kind of pick up, and dfsr.com/MLB will help you pick up the rest of it. Go over there and sign up for a free 3-day trial to our projection system, and you are all good to go. Buddy, enjoy all the great pitchers going today, and all the bad ones too, because it could be a pretty fun day at DFS.
Thanks, man.